Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Ball game over. American League Championship Series over. Yankees win. The Yankees win!
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 302, McMonagle here with you, 877-337-6666. All right, so yeah, we were just talking about it. I went back and watched it. I saw it on Twitter. We're going to play it for you here. If you were watching the game, and obviously the Ranger game we're talking about, as they took care of business and won game 2-4-3 over the Carolina Hurricanes, take a 2-0 lead heading to Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina, for game 3 tomorrow night. And we get ready for a Knick game tonight. But if you're watching the Rangers game last night, end of regulation, obviously really well-played game. Rangers jump out to the early lead. Carolina comes right back. They score to take a 2-1 lead. Lafreniere comes back, scores the second goal. They give up a goal right at the end of the second period with about a minute and a half left to take a 3-2 lead. Rangers come back. Kreider scores a power play goal, so it's tied 3-3. Unbelievable back-and-forth game. What, you know, is supposed to be an extremely hard-fought series. And, you know, if the Rangers lose this game, the difference between 1-1 and Carolina coming in, doing what they had to do, take a game in New York, heading home. Now they have the home ice advantage. All they have to do is win their games at home, and they'll win the series, as opposed to the Rangers taking a 2-0 lead, keeping that home ice advantage, going into Carolina, hoping to just take one from there and put a stranglehold. It's an enormous swing between 2-0 and 1-1. There's a minute left. The Rangers and their power play, the dynamic power play that blew away Washington and has been the reason why they're up 1-0 in this series, is on the ice. It's been a dynamic part of this team. And with 50 seconds left, we're watching the game. I just finished catching up on DVR. I'm watching the game on ESPN. And this is what we all had to deal with.
And this is the scene, and we are ready to go for a high-powered series in the Western Conference in the second round. With that, we say hello and thanks for joining us alongside A.J. Malesko.
A.J. Malesko.
Leah Hextall joins us.
Trocheck in the bumper
position. There, the game's back. They were literally skating in the dark. They went to that. They weren't playing. It wasn't a last-second thing. It wasn't It wasn't Barry Bonds chasing Babe Ruth's record. It was Hank Aaron's record. It was the introduction to Dallas and the Avalanche while they're skating in like the dark. I thought it was that scene in Miracle. How could they possibly do that? And then of course we're all like, I'm scrambling. Because it is the introduction. It's like, wow, they're going right to this broadcast. It wasn't like mid-thing where it felt like a mistake. It felt like, okay, they're moving to this game without any notice. With 50 seconds left in the tied game of the third period of a tie game on the power play. If the Rangers would have scored a goal while they were away from that broadcast, oh, my God. Can you imagine? You imagine they cut back and the Rangers are celebrating? I mean, I suppose it would have been a joyous moment, but, man, what a brutal, brutal thing that would have been. They got lucky. But everyone's killing him now. I mean, but just brutal. And then they decide not to give you any of the studio. And breaking down the end of the game, looking forward to the first overtime, they go right back to the Dallas game. And nobody here cares about Dallas, Colorado. Nobody. But yeah, that was an interesting moment. Because I'm standing up, I'm pacing, I'm hoping to avoid overtime because I know what's going to happen in overtime. I'm going to be sick to my stomach the entire... it's funny. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how you... the minute these games get intense like this, I got my heart in my throat. And I'm watching these games and it's been so much fun. But at the same time, I can't do it. I can't do it on a nightly basis like this. I need a laugher. Can we get one laugher? Can the Knicks win by 25 tonight? Would that be so bad? Would that be so terrible? Can you just have a nice, comfortable win? Do we need to have the final 10 seconds be as critical as it's been for every single one of these games, for all seven? At least the Rangers gave us a first-round series. We didn't care. Now, these two games have been exciting. Last night, double overtime. But the Knicks, every single game. I can't take it. It's too much. It's too much. Every night. 877-337-6666. And, of course, game two now will be for the Knicks, will be without Mitchell Robinson, as he has a hairline fracture in his ankle. He's going to be reevaluated much later after everything's over. He's gone for the rest of the postseason as long as the Knicks will go on it. Someone asked me before about building with Mitchell Robinson, and if you're not going to commit to him moving forward, well, he's already been committed to, which I thought, and I didn't say I would sign him. I don't know if you could trust him moving forward, but we'll see what they. He signed a 4-year deal 2 years ago, so he's got another 2 years after this one. The money de-escalates to $14 million next year and $12 million the year after that. Is there a way to get out from under that? Could you trade him if you're going to try and keep Hartenstein? Is there a place for both of those guys in the salary cap? So much is going to change. You would think this offseason, all the picks, they're going to try and add a star. My answer still stays the same, though. I am not. If there is a way to move on from Mitchell Robinson, or just in the idea of, do you consider him a major cog, a major piece of the future? I don't know if I can with his injury history. I just don't know if I can. So if there's a way to move on from him, to bring in another big man, or if Hartenstein, if to make it work, you have to move him to keep Hartenstein, or however Leon Rose deems it, I can't consider him. Like he can't be the starting center next year. Like, I just can't go into the year building with Mitchell Robinson as one of my guys. It's just too much now. He's injured all the time. And especially big men with feet and ankle problems, that's a recipe for disaster. So while, no, he's not a free agent, and they're not going to have to sign him to a contract, he's already under contract, there is a very possible scenario where he is no longer with this team. And if given the opportunity, for me, as much as I like him, and as much as he's impacted this team, as much as they're going to miss him the rest of the playoffs, I don't know how much in this series, a little bit. They'll always, you miss someone of his talent. But I don't know how much, and you already saw it, the minutes dipped in game one compared to what he was playing in Philadelphia. So I don't know how much it impacts this Pacers series. I think you could kind of get away with, bumping up Achiuwa's minutes and maybe throwing Sims in there for a little bit. But moving forward, if they do get past this series, it's eventually going to rear its ugly head because, let's be honest, they don't have much of a bench. And they just lost an important key cog to their bench. Mitchell Robinson was it. Was it. It's Mitch, Achiuwa, and Deuce McBride. Those are the three guys coming off the bench. And I really didn't expect it to change. And honestly, even with this injury, I still don't expect it to change much. I don't think they're suddenly going to, maybe Sims will play a little bit. I think Achiuwa played 4 minutes in game one. I think he's going to play somewhere more like, you know, 14 to 17 minutes in game two. I think that's where the difference comes. I don't think the bench expands that much, if at all. And I don't necessarily think that's the wrong move. I think Tibbs has handled it perfectly. You play the guys you need to win. That's just that they need DiVincenzo to play 40-plus minutes. They need Hart every minute of the game. Brunson's going to have to play 40-plus minutes, and he's going to have to score close to 40 points. I was watching SMY before. I saw his point total is 37.5. Can you imagine? Can you imagine heading into a postseason game, and his point total over under is 37.5? Man, oh man. That's where he is. He's being compared to Jordan. He's being compared to this one. I got one particular guy who's very upset with me that I'm saying he's better than Patrick Ewing. And I'm not saying he's better than Patrick Ewing. I'm saying Patrick Ewing never carried the team like this in the playoffs. He's carrying the team offensively. Patrick was important. Patrick scored some points. Patrick could shoot for a big man. But Patrick never just night in and night out dropped 40 points. Now, it's a different NBA. I get it. But we are seeing something with the Knicks we haven't seen in a long time, if ever, in a Knick uniform. It's crazy how good he's been. Crazy. And it's got to continue tonight if they're going to want to take a 2-0 lead. And ultimately, I feel good about it. Like that, I was talking about this yesterday. I feel good about where the Knicks are. And I understand that you could look at this two different ways. You could say, hey, Pacers had the better of the play. Knicks struggled defensively. You know, if it wasn't for a couple of whistles and, you know, the idea that they finish fairly well and how the game ended, I mean, for the most part, the Pacers had the better of the play. If one of six things go differently, they lose that game, and there's a chance they get run out of the gym and don't have an opportunity to play hero ball at the end and figure out a way to win these games. And if things don't change, the Pacers have an advantage. I could understand that thought process, and I think it's a fair one. But for me, I think the Knicks are going to adjust. I think the Knicks now got their feet wet in this series and how to play the Pacers and what they're trying to do. And plus, the Pacers are going to score. Like, I don't look at 117 for the Pacers and think, oh, what a terrible defensive performance. Yeah, they got beat on the pick and roll on a couple of different occasions, no doubt. No doubt. But this Pacers team scores. That's what they do. The Knicks are going to have to score. And the Knicks can score, and they will score. And, you know, they give up points in the paint. The Knicks have scored points in the paint. Like, they're going to have to keep up on some level. Are they going to try and slow this game down and change the pace that favored the Pacers big time in game one? They absolutely will. Are they going to come up with something? Is Tibbs working right now? I don't know about right now. Maybe right now. Yeah, Tibbs, if you're listening, what's up, man? Keep it up, buddy. Play who you need to play. Don't listen to the maniacs. The minutes are a regular season argument. Until it's blatantly hindering the team. Like, obviously, until then, minutes are a regular season argument. But I'm sure he's working at it right now to figure out a game plan to try and slow the Pacers down a little bit. I think they'll be better. I think the advantage in the play and the amount of time where the Pacers had the better of it and the idea that bench is going to score 46 points and all the different things that happened in that game aren't going to happen regularly. I think the Knicks are going to figure it out. I think the Knicks are going to play slightly better defense. I still think Pacers will score, but I think the Knicks will be better. I think they'll be better offensively. I think they'll be better taking care of the basketball. I think that a lot of things worked in the Pacers' favor in that game besides the last few minutes. And I don't expect the disparity to be that big. I think that was the opportunity for the Pacers to win that game and come into the Garden and win a game. Now, we'll see what happens, but I still look at that as a positive. Whenever you win the game, no matter how you play, I think there's a positive to be taken from it. And the idea that the Pacers gave them their best shot and it still wasn't good enough, I feel like I did after game one of the Philadelphia series. And although they did come back and play a game two that they should have won, and even though it went six, and even though there was a scare in that series, ultimately the Knicks won it. And I expect the same here in this series. And I think game one was the Pacers' chance to really put a, a real fear and a real scare into the Knicks. And they couldn't get it done. And really the same thing for Carolina, too. If we're looking about it, the Rangers have faced zero adversity. The Rangers haven't lost a playoff game. The Rangers cakewalked through their first series. They won game one relatively comfortable. I mean, they were up 3-1. It did get close. They did have, you know, 6-on-5 with the final seconds of the game with an opportunity to lose, you know, for Carolina to tie it, no doubt. But ultimately, the first adversity this team would have faced all, and I'm interested in it because even one loss now in, even a loss in game three in Raleigh doesn't necessarily put a scare. You lose both, now you're scared. But I'm curious to see how this team will react to a little bit of adversity in the series. In the games, they handle adversity excellent. They're down a goal 2-1. They're down a goal 3-2. Every time they battle back. Every time. So they've handled in-game adversity very well. How will they handle series adversity? Hopefully we'll never find out. 877-337-6666. And then there's the baseball story. And you know what? I'm going to say it. I said a little bit of it the other day, but I'm going to say it. I didn't like what happened last night with the New York Yankees. I didn't. I am not thrilled at what happened last night. If you didn't see what happened last night, the Yankees offense, the much maligned, the struggling Yankee offense, exploded on Verlander, which never happens. I mean, Verlander has owned the New York Yankees. Verdugo with a big three-run shot. And really, how about this? How about a little credit to Aaron Boone who put him clean up? How about just a little bit? I know the players play, and Verdugo hits the home runs, not Boone. But man, if he moved the lineup and the guy went cold, we sure do blame him. Right? Everyone wanted Volpe at the top of the order. Then Volpe goes cold. Why'd Boone do that? Why'd Boone put him up at the top of the order? Boone's always messing around. Got to get his hands on the game. He brings in a reliever. The reliever gives up a run. Damn, Boone, an idiot, Boone. And yet he moved Verdugo to the cleanup role, and he's killing it. And the Yankee offense has been better. The only time when this offense has struggled since he made that decision to move him to the cleanup spot was when he went on paternity leave and missed the Baltimore series. Since Verdugo's been moved to the cleanup spot, the offense has been much better, and Verdugo's been right in the mix of all this stuff. He hits a three-run home run in the first inning off of Verlander. So thank you, Boone. Good job for moving him. That was a visionary type move. Look at you. So let's give credit where credit is due. Good move, Boone. He comes through with the home run. Of course, you know, Soto and Judge come through. Volpe hits a home run, and the Yankees have now won the first five games of the year against the Houston Astros. They win 10-3, pouring it on. Houston can't pitch. It's been a disaster for them. And this all sounds great, right? And you're like, oh, Chris, that's what are you upset about? The Yankees have won four consecutive games. The Orioles lost yesterday, so now you're back to being tied and only mere percentage points behind them in the standings. The Yankees are now 24-13, 11 games over 500 on May 8th. They've got a 4.5-game lead over the Boston Red Sox. They have the second best record in the. They're, you know, pretty much tied for the best record in the American League. Things are going great, Chris. Other than that Baltimore series, what's the problem? I'll tell you the problem. And I told you this the other day. While I'm excited that they have won five in a row against the Houston Astros, and I'm pleased with where they are in the standings, and hopefully the offense is about to break out with Judge swinging the bat much, much better. Here's what I didn't like about last night. I do not want the Astros to fade into oblivion. I don't want to beat them five straight games in the regular season. I don't want to pound Verlander in a meaningless game on May 8th. I don't want to laugh and have a couple of jokes at their expense as they are now in dead last place, 8 games behind the Texas Rangers with a record of 12-23 with a run differential of minus 27, having lost now 3 games in a row. That is not where I want the Houston Astros. And I mean this. And this is the second time I'm saying it, so you know it's true. I enjoyed it. It was on the peripheral as I was watching the Ranger game. I was paying attention to it. I was paying attention to Alonso with a big double and a home run, too. We'll get to the Mets. As they've now won two in a row and kind of stemmed the tide with a couple of good games and yesterday in comeback fashion against the St. Louis Cardinals. But I don't want the Astros to just wake up one day and be a last place team. I don't want to exact revenge by beating them a couple of times in the regular season and then toasting their demise as they finish in last place and go off into the distance, never to be heard from again. I don't want that. I want to beat them when it counts. I want to make them hurt. I don't want to just be another team that beat them up in a miserable regular season. I don't want Altuve to never feel the pain we have felt. Because ultimately, they've won championships. They've been to seven consecutive ALCSs. And as much as I'm sure for Bregman, who's another guy who's off to a terrible start on a contract year, I'm sure for Bregman and Tucker and Altuve and Alvarez and Verlander and everybody else on that lousy team and that lousy organization, it's probably bothering them right now that they're 12-23 and in last place. I'm sure they don't like it. And I'm sure playing out the string, if that's what ends up happening to them in August and September, will feel completely foreign to them, and they'll hate it, and they'll be miserable. And in maybe some ways you could look at it and say, hey, we started it with four straight games in their building. We took their souls, to quote the great Evan Roberts, and from that moment on, they just couldn't figure it out. Not enough. So here's what I want from you, you lousy bums. I want you to take your lumps for the next 2 days, if they even play these games in the pouring rain. It's supposed to be bad weather the next couple of days. I want you to take your lumps from the Yankees. You drop two more. And then, damn it, you get off the deck and you start winning baseball games. And you get your ass into the playoffs so that we can finish you. Because this is not going to cut it. Battling the White Sox for the worst team in the American League doesn't do anything for me. Get your miserable asses up. Figure out a way to fix your pitching. Score some freaking runs. And get off the deck and work your way up a lousy division with the Troutless Angels, the Oakland Athletics, and figure out a way to work your way back into the wild card conversation, because damn it, Houston, you are not going to run from us. You are not going to go hide in last place, never to be seen again. So take your ass kicking and then get off the deck, because watching you slunk in the corner just saying, oh, what are you going to do? Not good enough. So I'm not that happy watching that miserable product the Houston Astros put forward. I'm not. I'm not going to be some Yankee fan who's all thrilled by it. Oh, yay, we're kicking the crap. It doesn't matter. I don't care about kicking the crap out of them when they're 10 games under 500 in May. I want to beat them when it counts. This has gone on far too long. This has been too painful. This has been too many times over to just let it end like this. To never get a chance of exacting revenge. To never actually get over the hump and beat the Houston Astros. Sure. Sure, I would love it. I don't care how they get there. If we're celebrating with a championship and we're going down the canyon of heroes as Yankee fans supporting our team, I'll be happy. I'll be thrilled. I'll be able to stick it in the face of a lot of different people who have, you know, since taking this job, think they could take shots at me as some sort of, you know, Yankee shill as you find me. I'll be basking in my glory. But in the back of my mind, it will bother me when I look at the standings and I see the 100-loss Astros, who had nothing to do with it. and I'll always have those ass kickings they've given us without doing it back to them. So you figure it out. What a miserable product they put forth. They are awful. And some Yankee fans might be happy to see it, not me. 877-337-6666. But yeah, it's good to see the Yankees score some runs. And Luis Gil is flat out filthy. He throws too many pitches. He's a little wild. He's got to work on that. But another brilliant, he gives up the one hit, which is the solo home run in the first inning. That's it. He's got dynamic stuff. That fastball plays, his slider plays. And right now he's pitching his ass off and is one of the more, you know, when it's straight up stuff-wise, he might be right now the best pitcher in the rotation. 877-337-6666. So the Yankees have rebounded off of losing 3 out of 4 to Baltimore. They have swept the Detroit Tigers for 3, and they take the first game of this Houston series, have now won all 5 against Houston. Like that matters, it doesn't. And they are 11 games over 500, have won 4 in a row and trending in the right direction. And for the Mets, we'll get to next, you can thank Mendoza for getting Alonso hot.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 3-2, and Clemens deals. Struck him out swinging. Number 4,000. Roger Clemens becomes the third pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball to record 4,000 strikeouts.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 333, McMonagle here with you. 877-337-6666. Mets with a very good win, 7-5 over the Cardinals. They were down early in this game. Budo gives up 3 runs in the first, really wasn't missing any bats. But you know what you like about a young kid like that? He can bounce back. And he ends up giving you 5 innings of and doesn't allow another run the rest of the game. 3 strikeouts, 3 walks, 5 hits, 5 innings, and he gives up those 3 runs in the first and then settles in and gave the team an opportunity to come back and do what they do. Nimmo gets you the big 3-run home run. He's starting to really kind of heat up. He gets you back into the game there. They end up scoring 6 runs in that 5th. Marte and then Pete Alonso with the double, and obviously Pete Alonso, big talking point over the last, you know, few days. And his struggles, and he's really been struggling. And I think Mendoza did a great job giving him a day off. Mendoza gives him a day off yesterday. He pinch hits him, and he hits the ball hard, lines out right to the second baseman. But Pete gets the day off, clears his mind a little bit. I think he looked freshly shaven in the game today. It looked like he cleaned up a little bit. You know, people, they're so superstitious. So he shaves his face, gets a day off, comes out, hits the ball hard. He gets 2 hits, obviously the double that scored, the double scored 2 runs, and then the home run. And what I like about the double, too, which I don't know if it's necessarily Pete's game, but it's pretty much a universal thing. When you start hitting the ball the other way with authority, you're starting to turn it around. And he hits that double to right center field, over the center field, his head on a line, and then an absolute bullet to left center field for the home run. And I fully expect, now I don't know if Pete's necessarily going to now go off on a tear, but this is who Alonso is. This is who he is. And those are, talk about non-clutch, those are clutch hits, no? Pete Alonso is too good to be as bad as he's been. Now, we'll see what he is average-wise. And I know, you know, a lot of this audience in particular is big on batting average. He's going to hit home runs. He's going to drive in runs. That's what you need from Pete. You need them to be in opportune times, too. Everybody's got to hit in the clutch. Everybody's got to come through with meaningful RBIs. But Pete's been really good, and I think you get a clean slate. You come in. You get a day off. And immediately pays benefits. I'm hoping this will be something that can get Pete going. That's a good opposite field double and the home run. They come through. They score 7 runs in the game. They win 7-5, and they stem the tide. And that's what they desperately needed coming off the miserable weekend in Tampa. These were important games. And to fall behind 3-0, this team has come. When this team was going well during that stretch after the terrible 0-5 start, they were battling back and coming back. That big game against Atlanta, who oddly enough is coming up. Like, they have had this resilient type of feel to them after being questioned, right? The toughness has been questioned at a bunch of different times. I know this isn't the exact same team, but it's got a lot of the same players as last year. Their toughness was questioned a lot last year. A lot of it having to do with not retaliating for hit batters and blah, blah, blah. But the toughness of the team has been overall tested and questioned. And this year, in a lot of different spots, the Mets have proven to be a tough, gritty, never say die, battle back type team. And when they're going well, that's what they do. When they're going poorly, it's what they don't do. And to fall behind early 3-0 and have a young kid on the mound who was getting hit. It wasn't one of those walking guys in, infield single, blah, blah. He was getting hit hard. He gives up the home run. You get one over Stewart's head, who isn't necessarily the best of outfielders, which we're going to get to in a second, as Bader comes in defensively for him a couple times in the series. But that ball goes over your left fielder's head. Then even the sacrifice fly from Arenado is hit on a bullet. I mean, he was not missing bats in that first inning. And then he settles in. And that's what the starting, for the most part, other than Quintana, that one, you know, bad start. Manaea's been wild as hell, but he's managed to make the big pitch in the big moment. Severino has had his games where he's dominant and then had his games where not so much. But unlike last year, he hasn't necessarily gotten killed. He's figured out a way to still give you 5-6 innings, get through, make a big pitch here or there, get through one inning clean, which gives him enough of a pitch count to get through the extra inning. Like, those are things that he wasn't doing last year. When he didn't have it, he was getting absolutely smoked. You've been able to stem the tide even on lesser performances from your starting rotation, and you love to see it from a young kid like Buddo to be able to do it against a lesser lineup. And right now, geez, I mean, how bad does Goldschmidt look? The former MVP is hitting 195 with a slugging percentage of 263. I mean, he's barely in the 500s OPS-wise. He is really struggling. No one cares, but it's just, I mean, some of the swings he took from Lopez was just unbelievable in this game. And the bullpen's been good, and the Mets bounce back. They needed to start this series as they're going to, you know, obviously take on Atlanta. This was a big series for them. They get back to 500 now. They're 18-18. Pete, you know, it looks like hopefully you've got Nimmo going. And if you can get Pete going as you head into a series against Atlanta, that's what you're looking for. And this was a big 2 games just to take a breath. Just to take a breath. But there's a couple of secondary stories. One, Wilson Contreras, if you saw, I read this, I didn't see it. Did J.D. Martinez have 2 catcher interferences in this game? Or just the one? Just the one? I thought I saw that it happened twice. Maybe it's happened twice since he's been a Met. I misread. I didn't see the other one. That's why I was asking. But he takes a swing, and we've seen plenty of catcher's interference. It's actually become more popular. I don't want to say popular, but it's happened more frequently. You know, as in the newer age baseball, I think catchers, for whatever reason, are trying to attack and get strikes. It seems like it's happening more than ever, but I don't know if I've ever seen directly to the hand and arm. I mean, J.D. Martinez, absolutely. Now, if you look at it too, I saw the video, you're not supposed to have any part of your foot on the wrong side of the back line in the batter's box, and J.D. Martinez does have about half his foot over that line. He might get a talking to from Major League Baseball after breaking Wilson Contreras' arm. He has a fractured arm. And if you heard him, I mean, you very rarely see a guy scream the way he screamed and see a guy rolling around in pain the way he was rolling around in pain. That bat just absolutely smashed right into his arm. But J.D. Martinez, too, he's coming along, too. He got a couple hits, but that one was brutal. And Wilson Contreras has a fractured arm, so who knows how long he's gone now. Reevaluated in 6 to 8 weeks.
He got the same timetable as Mitchell Robinson.
Same timetable as Mitchell Robinson. But, I mean, that was brutal. And then the other little story is Harrison Bader. Now, Harrison Bader was, when he was first signed by the Mets, people were hoping that it wasn't the last one, that he's a fourth outfielder. That's kind of the feeling for him. He's a tremendous defensive catcher, center fielder. Wilson Contreras is a catcher. He's a center fielder. He's a wonderful defensive center fielder. Wonderful. I love watching him play defense. The way he runs sideways to like round a baseball to get into throwing position, I've never seen anything like it. He's a tremendous defensive outfielder. And he can hit left-handed pitching fairly well. And for the Mets here, he's actually done a pretty good job. He's hitting 280. He's on base only, you're hitting 280, you're on base is 314, not really great. Slugging's 340, so I mean, he's got a 654 OPS. But 280, playing an excellent defensive center field, isn't that bad. But he hasn't played he hasn't started the last two games. Stewart, who's been hitting, Stewart leads the team in OPS. And obviously, since JD Martinez has come back, it's made it a little bit more complicated in the outfield for the Mets. And Bader has now sat the last 2 days and already. And here's, you know, I'm surprised with this, but Bader is already complaining about his role on the team. Already. I think it was Mike Puma of the Post had the story that he's already complaining that he thought he was going to have a bigger role with this team than the one he has now. And I mean, it's May 8th. Now, you know, he said, well, listen, it's about the team. But yeah, well, clearly it's about the team. You're complaining to the newspaper. You're complaining to reporters about your role with the team. And I understand his problem, but this team needs offense. And as much as 280 is pretty good right now, Stewart's been a guy who's really hit the ball well and has driven the baseball. And Nimmo is a key cog in this team, and Marte's been about as good offensively as anybody on the team. You're the odd man out, Harrison. And I'm sorry, but when you come off the year you had where you were designated for assignment, pretty much, you were placed on waivers. The Yankees cut bait with you. When that's how you were left off last year, you sign a one-year deal with the Mets. What did you expect? What level of guarantees were you given that you can't sit out for two games in May without being disgruntled? I mean, that, I have to admit, I like Harrison Bader. I like watching him play. And I think he's had a halfway decent year. Again, 280, there is no chance he comes finishing the season near 280. So far, he's been pretty good. But he had two at-bats in this game. He had an at-bat in last game. So even though he's not playing, he's coming in for defense relatively early in these games for Stewart. And already, on May 8th, after playing most of the year as your starting center fielder, has sat down two games in this series back-to-back and is complaining about his role on the team. This is why you need the kind of manager like Aaron Boone or Carlos Mendoza, because you got to ease these egos. You got to figure out a way to help Harrison Bader understand that for two games, you might not play. I mean, seriously, Harrison, who do you think you are? Who are you that you can't sit for 2 days without voicing your frustration about your role on the team? Honestly, who do you think you are? You're a defensive, light-hitting, right-handed batter who really doesn't hit right-handed pitching. And right now, God bless him, DJ Stewart's been good offensively, better than you. You signed a one-year deal with a Met team that told everybody it's about growth for this year. And while they'll try and win, but it's about developing and growth, you might be replaced by, like, you had to know coming into this season, you weren't guaranteed anything. And you've played most of the year as the starting center fielder, and now a couple of days in St. Louis, you have to ride the bench, and already the frustration is voiced. Already you have a problem with how you're being handled. Already you have an issue with your role on the team. What a joke. I mean, come on. Wake up. Wake up to real. How about a little self-awareness? You're a fourth outfielder on a good team, and the Mets are trying to be good. 877-337-6666. Mick Monagle here with you. So let's talk a little baseball. Pete Alonso with a couple of big hits. And again, I'm not trading Pete. Pete is a Met. That's what I would want. I want to sign Pete. I believe in Pete. I don't think as much as we like to, as much as we think in today's game, the home runs are prevalent everywhere. Look around. Find the guys who hit 40 home runs and driving 100 RBIs on bad years. They don't exist. And we'll see where this team is, but it's still the richest it's still the richest owner in all of baseball. They've got plenty of money coming off the books, including Verlander, who looks awful. And let me say this, since I was giving out apologies yesterday or the day before, I'll admit when I'm wrong, the Mets made the right move trading Verlander. I didn't like it. I thought trading Scherzer was enough. I thought you still needed some guys in this rotation. I hated leaving the rotation as bare as I felt like they left it. And I thought you could get it. You could get by trading just Scherzer, you know, trading some of the other pieces, but you still had Verlander under contract anyway. I hated to pay two guys the big money to move on from them, even if you were getting back Houston's best prospect in what, you know, right now is deemed not a very good farm system. And I just thought it was a mistake, but he was hurt to start the year. He's been bad. That entire pitching staff's been bad. And he just had a performance against the Yankees he never has. You hear that, Van Gundy? When I say never, I mean never does Verlander look this bad. He got lit around. He got hit up around the ballpark. So, congratulations to the Mets. They made the right move. They got a legitimate prospect for him, and he looks cooked. 877-337-6666. And now you're waiting for him to come off the books and Scherzer to come off the books. And you got to go pay Pete and you can still go get Juan Soto, right? Never. Look how happy he is. What are you guys, nuts? And he has pounded. And thankfully, it looked like that's all. Volpe just needed to remember what it was like to play the Astros and get make it feel like the beginning of the season again. Because I thought he had three really good at-bats where he drove the baseball and finally hit one out. So the Yankees pound the Astros, the Mets stabilize, win two games, get back to 500. Pete Alonso with a double and a home run. Hopefully he's getting hot. Budo continues to impress. Love it when a young pitcher struggles early and then finds his footing and can find a way to give you five or six innings, in this case five, from Budo. So the baseball day was good. The hockey night was excellent. And we get ready for the continuation of the Garden Party as we look forward to Game 2 tonight, another playoff game. In this stretch of every single night, a playoff game to get into. Last night was exhilarating. The Rangers win 4-3 in double overtime. And who knows what's in store for us tonight because the Knicks continue to provide these unbelievable finishes. And I can only imagine what they have in store for us this evening.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung on and hit in the air. The deep left. That ball is high. It is far. It is good. I don't believe it. Once again, deja vu. A two-out, game-tying two-run home run by Scott Rosas. Probably the most unbelievable feat in World Series history.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Well, it looks to be another, hopefully if the rain breaks in the morning tomorrow, 84 degrees, another sunny type day, summer, should I say, type day, warm. I wouldn't know. Sleeping away, it's still a weird schedule. I got to get used to it. But like the idea now, I'm like, you know, I never did my, it's the first year in a long time, I never did my Jimmy Buffett tradition. Blasting Jimmy on the drive into work on the first real nice day of the spring. That's already happened, I'm assuming. Certainly yesterday would have counted. I drive into work in the middle of the morning. It doesn't, you know, it's dark out. It doesn't feel like it belongs. I don't have a Jimmy tradition anymore. So bizarre. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but let me just say, in the least surprising news ever, Gisele Bündchen is furious about the Tom Brady special. Wow. Shocking. I said it the other day. I actually thought it was funny. And on some level, I respect anybody who would be willing to sit up there and listen to people tear you apart. I got one guy saying, you know, now have a salad on Twitter and I'm pissed off. Which doesn't even make sense. I comment on the Ranger game, great, now go have a salad. What? It's not, like, what? That's not, why? Why would you say that? I commented on the Rangers. I didn't say anything about anything. Right to the fat. It's unbelievable, man. Right there. Can't even comment on the Rangers. I said something about wanting something. No, you want a bucket of chicken. Okay, you guys, real clever. I don't know why people have to be like that. I just don't get it. But having said that, I respect anybody who would sit in front of a chair and get made fun of like that. But also, it is, especially for Tom Brady, who literally has everything. He doesn't need this. It's not like he's going, like Pamela Anderson had one a couple years ago. All right, I understand. I'm not saying that Pam Anderson's hard up. I'm sure she's doing quite well. But it's, you know, she hasn't been in the... She had that show done about her. I think this was before even that. But, like, you know, celebrities who are at the end of their fame or, you know, trying to drum up something. Like, Tom Brady, still Tom Brady. I know he's not playing. He just 1 year without playing. And he's about to go become the primary broadcast on Fox. We're going to see him every Sunday. Millions of people are going to watch once a week. He's him on television. Millions. The highest rated television show of the week will be Tom Brady 10 times this year. He doesn't need this. And he set himself up and his family and his children to be mocked and ridiculed. And I don't know what kind of relation. It's almost like it's spiteful to, yeah, I'll do this and they'll kill my ex-wife. Verbally, of course. I didn't understand why he wanted to do it. And sure, I'm sure she's furious with him. Did you hear some of the jokes? And I saw that Aaron Hernandez is, widow or girlfriend, mother of his children are upset too. I mean, you know, these are Just selfish from Tom Brady. Selfish. That's how I view it, because I dislike Tom Brady. But it was funny to see him get made fun of. And I actually thought the comedians did a great job. As far as roasts go, it was actually one of the better ones I've seen in a long time. Because there was no punches pulled. And that's why Giselle is furious. And I don't blame her. Good for you. I think you should get back together just so you could leave him again. 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you. Vince, I see you. We'll get to the phone calls. We could talk about what's going on. And what's going on? Oh, you know, just a playoff game every night. That's all. Just an exciting, riveting, heart in your throat, pacing the floor, watching every second, incredible finishes. That's all. Just on a nightly basis, live from Madison Square Garden. Just, you know, that little thing that we haven't seen in 30 years. But, you know, that's all. No big deal. It's friggin' tremendous. What a time to be alive. Plus, the Yankees have beaten the hell out of the Astros. Pete Alonso's woken up. Giselle's pissed off. What a weekend. What a week coming up.